there may be about four or five people here who are new. So I'll just give a quick summary of some of the things we discussed yesterday. And then we'll talk a little today, and then we'll get our feedback from our assignments. Since we're trying to, some devotees have asked that we record everything, I wanted to do more sort of interactive exchanges. But what we'll do is our homework assignments will be some of these exchanges. And I'll explain that a little bit later. Because I'd like us to divide, it's about 50 of us, to divide in five different groups. So we're going to see if it's possible, if during the day, that the groups will be able to meet. We'll see what happens about this. A few more people will be coming in, otherwise we could count off now. We'll do that before the session ends. But let me just update us. Everyone's kind of comfortable. Anyone else need a seat? Some of the brahmacharis can sit on the floor. Mother Jimon, are you okay? You comfortable there? Okay. All right. So, this is the course where we try to solve all of ISKCON's problems in a few days by trying to look closer, just as we started off yesterday, by trying to do some short but rather profound evaluation of just what is ISKCON. What is this society that we have joined? And so we pretty much came to an understanding that Prabhupada has given us a way to re-spiritualize the world. So we have first, of course, need to spiritualize ourselves. And while doing that, we have to be conscious that we are not just a monastic order. We're not just a cloister order. We're not into moksha. But our platform is how to revolutionize the world by connecting with the spiritual culture that's being brought in by Krishna and his eternal associates. We talked about our duties to our members, to our larger community, our particular type of governance. We looked at different types of ways to govern and explain those, and talked particularly about the way that our society is governed, some of the benefits of that as well as the complexities. We discussed about our relationships to our husbands, to our wives, to our children, to other people, to other religions, etc. We looked at community, and we tried to make some classifications between what is pseudo-community versus what is genuine community. And that's why we gave you that exercise last night, which we hope that 99% of you did, which you'll share with us. Because we were stressing that too often there is a pseudo-community where people come together to see what they can take. They come together, even though they are together, but it's still mostly based upon what the environment can do for them rather than what they can do or what they can share. And so we bring that material conception often into even spiritual environments. And so we understood that community really has to be based on open, honest, genuine communication. And environments where we do not have that, then it's not a real sense of community. There's always going to be problems with growth. So many other issues will just keep appearing, and this will be one of the bottom line causes. And that for community, we need serious cooperation. And so that means we need strategy, we need vision, we need ways that we can feel inspired by that vision constantly and feel that vision includes us. And then we, of course, as sadhus, we have our sadhu sangha, we have our communion. Is this your Bhagavad Gita on the floor? Oh, okay. We don't put it on the floor. So, it's just a writing book. So the communion is, of course, you know, the ninefold process things that we do. We do these things together. And also significant is samskaras. In a community, we don't have to sort of create things to bind us together, but there are many ways, especially Gopal Bhatta, he explains the samskaras in terms of the Vaishnava perspective. And so these are given things that we do because as the individual goes through the different rites of passages or life changes, it is important that that person is aware of what they are accountable for, and the community keeps them accountable and gives their blessings and their concern. See, when there is lack of culture, there is a lack of knowing what to do, when to do, and how to do, and so therefore there is a lot of waste of energy and confusion. And so people are not getting the blessings from others and the support, or are they clear themselves what they are accountable to? So community, it's, we were saying there is a culture of community that we're trying to look at, this culture of bhakti. And so it's to be very defined. The more there's ambiguity, nebulousness, the more maya will definitely come in and will take over. We do not know what to do or how to do, then maya will employ us. And so we looked at the fact that so that our communion is doing these things together, and you can reflect yourselves on the different types of samskaras and ways how to implement them into your communities. And this way, it brings all the devotees together in a wonderful way of constantly appreciating the maturation and the growth, etc. But we do not have the samskaras and the open communication, the istagosis and the one-to-one conversations, etc., then everyone suffers because no individual is able to bring them their four selves or share off of their four selves to the environment. And when they're not able to do that, they're not able to experience others in a wholesome way either. So too much in our communities, there is too much posturing, role-playing. We'll talk about that a little bit. There's too much fear, too much anxieties, lack of trust, and right out, deviation and even corruption. And so this is very distracting because where there is deviations, corruptions, phobias, fears, genuine fears, then it's like those things assault the environment. And the society that we have given our, or trying to give our lives to, we get cheated. So the more that there is maya in the atmosphere, the more we are cheating ourselves and cheating others. Because it interferes with our ability to be able to engage in surrenagrity and full surrender. So, one of the things we wanted to look a little bit more at community as like a living organism, or community having life itself. And so, just as we have, Jnana Bija and Karma Bija, or we are particularly trying to bring out the Bhakti Lata Bij, that there is something we can call a community bij that can help us to tune in. It's like a barometer to how healthy the community is. And so that is to be nurtured and to be watered. Just as you plant a seed, and so you want to give it the proper care, the proper nourishment, so that there's a crop and you can do the harvesting. So when there is obviously the klesha, the sins and the anarthas, when there is the pervading lust rather than the loving exchanges, then what we have is in the community is we get more and more of the same. We share that in our relationships, we pass that down to our children, and when we try to preach, the preaching is so much connected with mixed devotional service because it can lack a significant amount of potency. So, one of the ways that we are able to constantly refine our consciousness and our communities is that we have to go to the actual experts. Because one of the things that's so wonderful about devotional service is that we really have the best experts, because, for instance, we have the example of the Goswamis, we have the example of the great Acharyas, the Mahajans. We have all of these persons who expertly show us what to do and why to do certain things and when to do them. So one of our great experts, Prabhupada explains, that the Hare Krishna movement, Gaudiya movement especially, that it is to be understood by the presentations and the offerings of the Goswamis. And Prabhupada explains that of all the Goswamis, that Rupa Goswami, he is the topmost of the Goswamis. He is the like leader or chief of the Goswamis. And Prabhupada explains how this Krishna conscious movement is very much under his care, his blessings. We can say under the whole parampara, but we understand that there's some very special blessings by Rupa Goswami. So he becomes then a foremost authority to consult, to try to understand what will help us individually to grow in our devotional life and what will allow our communities to expand, where we begin to practice more and more of what we're ultimately becoming or trying to become in the spiritual world. This is why it's so significant for us, because our entire involvement is how we are practicing and becoming more and more transcendentally community-oriented so that we can join the eternal transcendental community in the spiritual world. So the idea of focusing in on some bundle of relationships and the culture and the maturation of community is not something extracurricular, but it is some of the most essential aspects of our existence as Vaishnavas, as Hare Krishna devotees, trying to catch up with our eternal identity. So we find then very emphatic. Rupa Goswami has given us so many writings, and one of his writings that you've been hearing about the last few days is Nectar of Instruction. Just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left us the Shashastakam prayers. Very brief presentation, but all of Krishna consciousness is literally contained within those prayers. So Srila Prabhupada explains that Rupa Goswami has written many, many books, but especially his Upadesamrita, Prabhupada explains that it is analogous to Lord Chaitanya's offering of the Shashastakam prayers for the world, that this Upadesamrita is of that importance to the devotee in developing his or her Krishna consciousness and for developing the community. So we're going to look at this as a first formula of analyzing what are some of the problems that we are haunted with in our Krishna conscious communities and what can be done to make a difference. Because we're at a very critical time. We discussed yesterday that we lost about 1,000 devotees just last year alone. And with the increase in fragmentations that's taking place in so many, many different sectors of our international society, and even within a particular project, a particular temple. Sometimes in one temple, you may have 4 or 5 different fragmentations, different subcultures, different groups. And it's like dynamite. It's like a keg of dynamite just waiting to explode. And because of all of these explosions, while we're thinking about it, tomorrow, everyone, if possible, try to bring pencil and paper, because we're particularly going to address tomorrow to give each of you techniques of how to significantly deal with conflict resolutions in your families, in your schools, and in your particular temples and projects. Because this is a very, very important issue for us, as everywhere now in Kali Yuga, conflicts are every place. And the culture of achievement or success or the degree that the problems become more and more protracted is actually based on our understanding of conflict and what kind of tools we use to resolve it. And for Vaishnava, it's even more important, because when we do not approach analyze or deal with conflicts properly, we create serious offenses, and everyone suffers in such a way. And that is what has been increasing in the last 5-10 years, is that devotees all around the world are just beating each other over the head, you know, with philosophy. They study things, look at things, and see how they can take it like a weapon to beat each other. Or they find ways to try to push a certain idea, but in the wrong way. Or they overreact, or they scapegoat, or they have genuine concern, and they have trouble trying to see how to get their points across. And so it brings in so much confusion. And so sometimes people find it very distracting being in certain communities or in certain temples, because they find that they have less peace. Where the temple is supposed to be a place where you come and you immediately feel rejuvenated as you have come in contact with the carriers of the bhakti. But now sometimes devotees are afraid to send their devotees to different temples or different projects, because they do not know what kind of confusion that devotee is going to encounter, or what type of madness that devotee is going to experience. And so, of course, that is most unfortunate, because our life is based on our associations. So tomorrow, please bring pencil and paper, as we're going to kind of systematically look at ways of how you can all be ambassadors in your different environments and help to give the leaders and the devotees in general a little more insight in dealing with conflict, so we get off this kind of battlefield that just accelerates and accelerates itself and begins to make us treat each other as non-Vaishnavas. And when that is happening, Kali is smiling like anything, because this is the greatest way, of course, we destroy ourselves from the inside. Rupa Goswami, as we've heard so many times, this Vinashati and Prasidyati, Achihara Payaschas Cha Pajapa Niyamagraha Gana Sangas Cha Loyam Cha Sabiya Bhaktiya Vinashati. So we want to look first at Sabiya Bhaktiya Vinashati. Now, we have read this and we've heard this many, many times. Now we want to look at it more as tools or medicine for dealing with some of the ills that we're having to be confronted with. First, Rupa Goswami explains, one's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too attached in the following 6 qualities. So we can transpose, one's devotional communities become spoiled, destroyed, stagnated, and sometimes destroyed by these 6 qualities. First, we have, of course, eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. So it's Atyahara. So sometimes the projects, they get focused on so much accumulation of things. We've seen that so much of our ISKCON, especially during the time of the dominance of the Acharyas system, that there was so much emphasis, the Zono Acharyas, on just so much external expansion. I mean, some places now we have huge, huge farms that we wind up selling. We had huge, huge castles. And sometimes there was like competition, who could get the biggest castle, who could get the biggest land, etc., etc. So many times the planning and the vision was not really so much based on what is going to give the greatest care to the greatest number of devotees for the most extended period of time. And so sometimes the vision being on accumulation, and with the puja or the ego, then some of the projects and the arrangements were such that it was a certain kind of competition that didn't really address the needs of the devotees. So this emphasis on this over collecting in such ways can cause weakness to the individual creeper as well as to the community. Number 2, over endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. So you see this overeating, over-collecting, over-endeavoring. Meaning that we're seeing ourselves as the proprietors, ourselves as the enjoyers, and we're kind of using Krishna to do what we want to do for satisfying our gross or subtle sense gratification. So when an individual is doing like that, or when a community's vision is focused based on this kind of nucleus, then that community is leading for stagnation and destruction. Number three, talking unnecessary about mundane subject matter, or engaging in too much whimsical reading of literatures or sports, etc., doesn't mean that we should be fundamentalists where there is no sports, there is no interaction. No, that should be there, because if we talk about samskaras and community building, we're talking about devotees doing things together, finding many ways so that there is less and less, to the point that there becomes practically no reason to do things outside of the Vaishnava community, because the community is fulfilling all the basic needs, physical, emotional, psychological, and most important, spiritual. So this Prajalpa does a couple of things. First, we understand that of all the senses, the tongue is most difficult to control. So we understand that when devotees engage in the Grama Katha rather than Krishna Katha, then that begins to also pollute the atmosphere. And so sometimes devotees are interacting, they're trying to hear what is the latest gossip, or they're trying to understand what is the latest deviations. And so their nectar becomes that of just mixed devotion and things that are of a distractive nature. It really does not have much to do with our real involvement in the royal path of devotional service. Also understand that where there is too much release of energy of speculation and whimsical talking, then the individual as well as the environment becomes more sexually agitated. When a person or when a community environment is so much loose talk, this becomes vital energy that's not being reserved. And what happens is that you find that there becomes more promiscuous activities, and individuals themselves are more agitated. You begin to find more people falling down with this person's husband, this person's wife, or pursuing this, or even abuse of children sexually, because we have these vital resources that are to go somewhere. And when we do not channel them or use them properly, then that energy begins to connect in unhealthy ways. And we can see that. We can see that when we're hearing Krishna Katha and we're speaking Krishna Katha, we gain a certain potency. And when not, then we find ourselves feeling unenthused, which we'll talk about later, and all the demands begin, the bodily demands begin to increase. So where we see that these things are not being properly addressed, then guarantee that there is weak community or pseudo community rather than genuine, healthy community. Then Rupa Goswami explains, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them. Sometimes we have seen devotees or environments are so fundamentally oriented that it cramps the spiritual creativity, that it causes people to act excessive in some ways, as if Krishna consciousness is just all rules and regulations. And devotees go along in that way, and so they're being forced for just uniformity, rather than, as we were saying yesterday, unity with diversity, or genuine conformity. So when they are just forced into that way, then they may even produce so many things, but for a temporary time, because it's unnatural. So some projects are geared like that, where the leadership so much gets devotees motivated and enthused and pushes and does things kind of in a sectarian way as a way to try to protect and to steer those devotees up. And so they minimize other ashrams, or they minimize other kind of services. They're thinking that their service is only the best. Everyone else's service is just something that's kind of a peon of a sort of nature. And this may help for a temporary period. But it's unhealthy, because bhakti is not something that is so myopic. It's not something that is so artificial. It's not something that's based on such artificial coercion. So when an individual is living like that, or when a community is focusing in this way, it's pseudo-community, and after a while, because the creeper, the community bija, is not being sufficiently watered, you'll begin to see that people start voting with their feet. They start leaving. They start going away from the project. And they start losing, after a while, faith in the leader because they will not feel that the leader's vision is really working. After a while, they'll see that things are happening, that the leader is using people to do things rather than using things to help people. So we have this sometimes in our communities where our leadership is so much using people to make something happen. And when those people are exhausted, bring in more people. And then let them fend and struggle for themselves. So the vision is too much making things, external things happen, where the real building should be how to do things so that the people's basic concerns are in fact addressed. So when that's not done, then we have this Acchahara Payasya Pajalpa Niyamagra. So we have this kind of fundamentalism where there's a big push, but it's artificial. Now, of course, the converse of that is then when we have an environment that thinks that these rules and regulations is just archaic, is unnatural. And so you have some communities where previously they were so rigid in such an artificial way. And then they go to the other extreme where they begin to feel, now I must get a life for myself. I have given so much previously to the mission, now I have to get a life. Or I have denied my natural needs and tendencies and desires and emotional interests and so many things. And so now I want to be honest. And I want to just act upon these particular vegas. Yes, we always want to be honest. We want to be honest that we're in a conditioned state. Honest that we need help. Honest that we need each other. And most important, honest that we need the medicine that helps to bring about the healing. There's nothing so wonderful about a person coming to the hospital. They tell the doctor, you know, I just want to be honest that I am sick and I am suffering and I want to be honest. So because I'm suffering so much, I want to deal with this, my pain. I want narcotics. I want drugs. I want alcohol. And I want you to prescribe different drugs for me, just for my pain. Well, yes, you're honest, and you maybe are dealing with some of the symptoms, but you really want to present your case so that you can deal with the actual disease. There's nothing wonderful about devotees saying, well, I used to attend the programs, I used to chant my rounds, I used to do book distribution, I used to do like this, do like that, and now, boo, I want to get a life. Now I have to feel happy and pleasure, some pleasure. Well, we're not going to feel any serious happiness by engaging in Chapala Sukra. We get some stimulation. We say there's no happiness in the material world. We're not saying that there is no stimulation. Stimulation is there. But we say there's ultimately no happiness outside of devotion because whatever we do that is sinful, because we're going to get around the corner at some time reaction for that, we say there's no happiness because the sense of gratification we do is like pressing buttons, asking to suffer in certain ways, asking Maya to kick us in certain ways. So we say there's no happiness. So we have this syndrome going on now in some of our communities where some cases were very strict, fundamentalist, in some sense, always to the particular point of the rule in almost an external way, and practically being condescending to others who weren't strictly to the letter, and then the community goes to the other extreme. So in our devotional service, individually as well as in the community, that we have to have a balance, constantly looking at what is the essence, what is going to bring about the greatest expansion of Krishna consciousness for the greatest number of people. And that is in a genuine sense, not just in the fanfare. Subhu Goswami explains. Now here we have a resident from the spiritual world who is engaged in the highest selfless service of compassion, who specifically comes into these hellish environments to give us the actual technologies in what we can do to be able to come and to join him. We have no better experts than such people. Then Rupa Goswami explains that practicing the scripture was rejecting. Then he says, association, number five, with worldly-minded persons. Just as Sanatana Goswami explains, when we look at what constitutes a devotee is particularly careful not to take the association of materialists. Now we do preaching and we have to associate with materialists, or as we are not so much communal, as we are extending and becoming more pluralistic, as devotees having to deal with the economic problems, etc., then there is sort of more interaction with the secular world. So there, and it's healthy in some ways, because we discuss what ISKCON is that we are to be re-spiritualized, and we are to be the people who have the spiritual answers, the spiritual guidance to everything. So if we understand that, that means the Right to Life movement. That means the education. That means our relationships. That means parenting. That means the ecology movement. All of these things that are about trying to improve on the quality of life in a genuine sense, to help to bring people from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness to the transcendental state of becoming pseudo-bhaktas, is that actually we are to be the people who should be having major input and guidance. But how can we do that if our own infrastructure, our own communities are so weak? If our own communities and our own devotional creepers are so weak, then even when people read our books, hear our philosophy, then they come close, they will want to see how it works. And then when they come and they see that our divorce rate in most places is even higher than theirs, when they see that many of our children are very dissatisfied with the society that they are inheriting, when they see that some of our political and legal structures and arguments and fighting is as much as what goes on sometimes in the secular communities, when they see that many places in the world our devotees are on welfare, while we talk about the evils of society, and then when they see that we are taking the money from those who are engaged in the mundane lifestyles of the work field, workforce, and so we are taking their money while we talk about them, then sometimes these governments are going to be very disturbed. We visit some countries and we see it's an amazing number of devotees who are on welfare. Because we can justify, well, the money is going to go to the military-industrial complex, so of course better to let us use it. But we understand that as Vaishnavas, especially as Vaishnava Brahmanas, we do not want to be dependent so much on mundane society. Because the more we are dependent on mundane society, the more then we begin to have to justify or deny some of our principles as we try to take shelter of that mundaneness for various types of reciprocation. So associating with worldly-minded persons, when too much of this is done, because there's no such thing as neutral association. In any associations, we are giving something and we are taking something. And whoever is more dominant, that is going to be the dominant influence. So last, Rupa Goswami explains being greedy for mundane achievements. So we want to have the loyam, we want to have the greed, of course, for good association. We are hungry and one wants to be nourished. But at the same time, we don't want to allow that greed or that prema, which is really prema, to become kama, where our interactions are so much influenced based on such things. This will bring failure to the community. Now, before we hear from some of your own reports, we want to just take the text number 3, sloka number 3, where Rupa Goswami explains sabhya bhakti prasidyate. So he talked about the things that will bring failure. Now he gives us the 6 things that will help to guarantee success. See, one of the reasons we're taking time to go through this, which we all know, is that one of our issues in our movement is that we have so much knowledge, so many answers to every problem that we have and problem that society have, but somehow we don't always use it. And because of that, we find ourselves often bewildered, or we find ourselves getting diminishing returns, or we put massive energy into things, and the energy does not correspond to the results. We look at the millions and millions of books we distributed, and we look at the number of people that we've actually affected, it is not on par. We look at the amazing projects we have all around the world. We look at the number of people who we've really changed. It's not really up to par of what it could be with the facilities that we, in fact, have. We look at the amazing amount of intelligent devotees we have, you know, amongst our leaders. And then we look at the fragmentations, the anxieties, the gloom. I was speaking to the board that this is the first year we've ever had so many people who are not attending. And in many cases, sickness, but a lot of that sickness is distinctly due to stress and depression, because it's becoming more and more complex and difficult to deal with a society where we are constantly shooting ourselves in the foot. One of the things Rupa Goswami is making it clear that we should do for healthy community that we avoid, or where we are having indirect communications where we say one thing, we mean something else, where we position and posture ourselves in political orientations just like political parties do. And so we get the results of that. We get more and more duality rather than transcendence. So we look at these six qualities. Of course, the verses, Utsahan Nischaya Dayat Tata Karma Pravartanat Sangha Tyaga Sato Vritti Satvir Bhakti Prasit Yati. There are six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotional service. So we can say there are six principles that are there for the execution of developing pure devotional community. So what is the first one? What is the first principle? Yes, enthusiasm, utsahan. Now, why is this important? Because this immediately sends us a signal. In our own lives, when we find that we're not feeling enthusiastic, we should immediately go hunting to see what is going wrong. What am I doing improperly? Is it that my sadhana is weak? Is it that the quality of my association is not uplifting? Is it that my faith has become so poor and so weak? Is it that I am not reading? Is it that I am not hearing? So we can check in. But that should send us. It's like sometimes there's sickness and you get fever or you get headache. So the body is sending off some signals that there's some things that are wrong. You vomit, you get diarrhea. So it's letting you know that there's foreign subject matter that's there, that's intruding into the system. So the body has its way to try to work it out. So when we find ourselves having lack of enthusiasm, that is a signal that something is wrong. And when we find a massive environment in the community is like that, we can understand that there are some serious issues that are wrong, that the science is not being properly addressed. Because we are to feel ongoingly enthused because we are preparing to be freed. We have the ticket to be able to travel to the spiritual world. Now we're just getting in line, ready to pay the price, to do the necessary, to board, and to be carried by the mercy of our founder, Acharya. So there should always be a certain amount of happiness. This is what I explained the other day from the Skanda Purana, that one of the aparads is to see a Vaishnava and not to feel happy. There should be so much happiness as we are seeing each other, serving, interacting, as we're even struggling together, where there is genuine sense of community. Then there'll be tremendous amount of enthusiasm as we are anticipating different types of projects, as we're agitating our minds and our planning of how to do the next thing. And so there will be this ongoing zeal. But when we find that we are not feeling enthused, or we find that the community that we're in, there's a lack of enthusiasm, then we should realize that the germs are entering, our spiritual immune system is weak, our community immune system is weak, and when the immune system gets weak, if we don't take care of it, it gets weaker and weaker, and the person can even die. I mean, there's some places now where we have facility for 100, 200, 300 people, and we may have 5, 10 devotees struggling, trying to maintain that. And how long those devotees are going to last? How long those devotees are going to last when same people are giving the same class they're given 100 times, when the Artik is there and one or two people are there, when Krishna consciousness has become a struggle where everyone is struggling to do basic service and they still can't get all the services done? How a person is going to feel inspired to continually to give their lives in that situation? Or how they're going to feel inspired is that the temple is going on and new devotees are being made, and after 4 or 5 years, that those devotees go, new devotees come, and then those go, and new devotees come, and then they begin to wonder, what is going on? People coming in, and they're going. And the leader is saying, oh, everything is all right, because books are going out, some bills are being paid, and some people are paying those bills, and then it's considered that the community is healthy. No. After a while, the devotee will be in that situation where they begin to question their whole existence. And the leader will suffer, because where the leader does not enhance the devotional quality of those who are under one's care, then there is karmic consequence for that. Everybody is held accountable. Krishna is not allowing someone to be responsible for people's lives, and they're not somehow helping to sufficiently water the creeper, and Krishna says, oh, it's okay. You just enjoy the position of leadership, position of authority, and whatever happens, happens. No, there are consequences. So enthusiasm, very important for the individual and the community. 2, endeavoring with confidence. That we are to constantly ask questions, have answers, because we're not to be blind followers. And we are to try to understand so that as we do things with understanding, they take on a greater potency. The more that we understand what we are doing, any type of our the ninefold process, the more there's understanding, the more potency is connected or it comes in concatenation with such. 3, being patient. Because we're in a take society, there's a tendency that we come to devotional service and we're thinking that just overnight we are to become pure devotees. Now, we should have a kind of patient impatience. We should feel that we just can't wait. That it's been so many lifetimes and we really want the higher realizations and the higher tastes. But at the same time, we should feel quite unworthy while we maintain the zeal and pushing and such. Prabhupada gives the example that the woman is married and there is exchange, and it's not that the baby just comes automatically, but in time the baby will in fact come. 4, setting acting according to regulative principles, and we sort of discussed that, such as Swavanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So we look at those things particularly when we are, if not feeling enthusiastic, or we see the general mood of the community going down. It's like, I don't know if any of you were there. Before coming here, I was in England. And so I just came from Europe, Italy, and Zurich, France. And then the leaders particularly asked me to give a workshop on depression, because there was just so much massive depression in this wonderful project. One devotee had just committed suicide. Some devotees had just been remitted, you know, to the mental institution. And because the atmosphere was permeating with such, people were very hyper, experiencing all kind of anxiety. And so even little thing becomes difficult to do. So I gave a rather extensive workshop because we are having, as well as the commies, you know, the World Health Organization, some years back, came out with a very astounding report, and the report was that as the present international community, the present patterns of the international community, that after the next 10 years or so, one of the greatest killers and disturbances to the international society is going to be mental illness. And it's going to be practically as great or maybe even rising above the devastating effects of heart disease and cancer. And one of the main complexities of the mental illness problem is people experiencing depression. As people are fried out with their jobs, with their husbands, their wives, their children, their political leaders, their religious leaders. So this is an unfortunate phenomenon that's expanding every year. And so we'll see, you know, suicide on the rise because of this also. And we're having, and we don't talk about it so much, but if we looked at the number of suicides we had in the last 2 years, we have many devotees who are attempting suicide or committing suicide. And it's just not talked about so much. We were discussing in the GBC meeting about one guru falling down just recently, and one of the devotees trying to commit suicide, and just by Krishna's mercy, someone came in the door just as he was getting ready to shoot himself. When we are feeling that we left material life, and we're disappointed with that, and then we come into the spiritual communities, and we also get disappointment, then it is very, very serious. I share with some of you the story of this devotee named Bhakti Steve in the very early days in New York. There was this boy who was a little eccentric, and he was coming around to the temples. And then one day, he just disappeared. And Prabhupada inquired from the devotees, where was Bhakti Steve? And the devotees told Srila Prabhupada that Bhakti Steve had committed suicide. And so Prabhupada became very, very grave. And very prayerful, contemplative mood. And he explained first, "Dear Krishna, wherever this boy is, please immediately let him come back and take birth in the family of a devotee." So here, Bhakti Steve, he was not a disciple of Prabhupada, initiated devotee. He was not a grand disciple. He was somebody who was a little bit, you know, see, neurotic. With some mental problem, somewhat. But Prabhupada was seeing that, yes, this boy had some problem, but because the devotional environment didn't somehow support him sufficiently, then he felt, why live? I cannot find shelter in the material community. I cannot find shelter amongst the sadhus. So therefore, Bhakti Steve took his life. And so we have some cases like this, young as well as older devotees, whose lives have become so distraught because they look at themselves and they feel to be failures, or they do not feel that there is sufficient love and care for them. And see, keep in mind, when somebody commits suicide, it's like they're saying, nobody loves me enough for me to live on for that person or those persons. And I don't feel enough affection for anyone that I'm ready to live on for them. Because even just one person, you feel they love you sufficiently, you're ready to go on because of that relationship. So when we have this happening in secular society as well as in our own society, then it's really a sign how we have to really intensify our sambandha, our relationships, based on really being able to support each other. And then we have these devotees who then leave the culture of bhakti, and they're like ghosts. Because once you know all of this, you can't really fully go back into material life and try to enjoy. Every time you're trying to engage in some illicit activities or devious activities, then your intelligence beats you so much whatever little gratification you get, the amount of suffering that you undergo far cancels out any amount of enjoyment. So if you analyze, we have more of our people outside of our institution. And I don't just mean those who are outside who are still going on, but those who have now broken the vows that they committed to. And you better believe they are in a very serious suffering condition. And many of those people, if they felt more support, or if they saw a better examples of what's going on within our communities, then they would say yes to Krishna again and would try to revitalize their spiritual lives. So we owe it to ourselves. We owe it to each other. We owe it to Srila Prabhupada. Next, he mentions, Rupa Goswami, abandoning the association of non-devotees. Six, that was five. Following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Then he concludes, these six principles undoubtedly assure, he's saying it categorically, they will give us the complete success of pure devotional practice. Or we can say complete success for pure devotional MC community. Now, I'm just going to take 5 minutes to brush through this last text, text four, where he explains about the principles, of course, of love. Dadati pati granati gunyam akhayati pichati bhukte bojayati chaiva satvirham priti lakshanam. So the principles of priti, of love. And again, we've heard these many, many times, and we just want to focus on these in a deeper level. Because our Krishna consciousness is not so much just acquiring more things and more information, but it's really going deeper and deeper into what we have. So he explains, offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts. We have to think about, when's the last time we gave gifts to someone? Matter of fact, as part of your homework assignment tomorrow, give somebody a gift. Okay? Find something you can give to someone. Doesn't matter what it is. But find something that you give to a Vaishnava. But try to incorporate it more into your actual life. Two of the main places that I stay in Washington, at the Institute in Gita Nagari, I have a closet of just gifts. So when I see a devotee, talk to a devotee, then I give a gift. It helps you to honor that devotee's existence. It helps that devotee to feel that the association that you shared was a meaningful experience. And because so much of our own Krishna consciousness, and if we had time, the last day we'll discuss that, is literally based on how we interact every moment with each other. So the more that we are looking for Krishna within inside of each person, the more we're accepting that each person is actually a pure devotee, it's just that we're covered over in different ways. As we try to address that purity, then we are more and more just trying to connect with Krishna, and to that degree, Krishna will come out, will jump out for us, to us. Sometimes we go months and months and years, and we don't give a little gift. But for Vaishnavas, it's very important. It's an exchange of priti, of love. So offering gifts and, of course, accepting and receiving gifts. That one we have no problem with. We can accept very nicely. We wonder when people are going to give us something. Inquiring with confidence, revealing one's mind. And notice when Prabhupada talks about inquiring with confidence, he talks about inquiring about the confidential activities of the Lord. He does not talk about so much confidentiality. See, we are trying to stress to many devotees that in your communities, try to take vows to minimize confidentiality. I know that sounds a little strange in these days where everybody wants to talk about the importance of honoring confidentiality. That is okay if you want a model of fragmentation, of failure, of secrecy. But as we gave you this assignment about dealing with communication, that when you have a model to basically try to minimize confidentiality, then you try to create an environment where everyone is more sensitive to each other's needs and is trying to be available to assist each other. When we have too much emphasis on confidentiality, it means we're encouraging keeping things in the closet. We're encouraging a difference between, we call it dichotomy of moral conduct. We're encouraging that we have private life and public life is different. We're encouraging the tendency for people to live based on a lot of false ego and artificial connections. And so, as devotees, we want to be able to serve each other better. And we want to know when we're doing something that is not offering value to the community. We want to know when we're doing something that is not good for ourselves so we can change. But we're noticing in our society, almost every year, at least for the last 6, 7 years, maybe 10 years, there is more and more increase in working out of the mode of accepting and honoring confidentiality. We do it in every level. There is things that the executive board of our movement does not tell the general GBC body. There are things the GBC body does not always share with the general devotees. And so we then propagate a culture of distrust. And in one sense, confidentiality normally means that something comes out slower and with confusion. Because basically it's hard to hide something, because in a communal environment, gradually things do come out. And sometimes Krishna arranges for things to come out. So obviously there are sometimes that a situation is such that a person requests you to honor confidentiality because they are a little intimidated about what will, how others may respond, or they feel the environment is not such that it is to be revealed, of course, and then it's your duty to honor it. But other than that, we should try to see how to minimize. I have a big problem when someone, especially in leadership, says confidentiality. You know, my mind just goes batty. In many of our meetings, when I hear confidentiality, I practically want to walk out. Because the understanding is that we are a community of love and devotion, and we have what is to be done, and if we're not doing it, then we should look closer to see why we're not doing it. And if we are doing it, we should be ready to share it and to explain that as Vaishnavas, we do not have so much of a private life to that extent. Yes. What I'll do, I'll just read these last two, and then we'll take questions for a few minutes, and then we'll take our assignments. So I 7:10, I'll stop. And by 7:15, the latest. So inquiring, accepting prasad, and offering prasad. Now these are the six symptoms of priti, six symptoms of love. So when we do these things, we want to do it with open heart, not with grudge. We don't want to do it because we have some hidden agendas. We're not trying to posture. Because then what happens is that you say something, and I'm not so sure if you really I'm meaning what you say. I do something, I say something, and you're not so sure what my real intention is. And this secrecy is like violence to the community bija and to the bhakti lata bija. So we should try to be ready to put more things on the table so that we can address those things. And this way we begin to minimize some corruption, begin to minimize deviation. We begin to minimize some of the offenses because things become more in the open where we can then evaluate based on a genuine sense of Shastra to see to what degree that we are really honoring such. So this is our first part of our presentation this evening. Now what we want to stop and do is we want to see what questions you may have from what we just shared. And if you have some questions that were linking over from yesterday, since we didn't have chance to address questions, and then we'll go into our assignment and take off whatever little time that we have left. Gentlemen. Well, a couple of things. First thing is I express what I say in one environment, I say in all environments. Because I feel that what we say and what we do, it should be an offering to Srila Prabhupada. And so I try to make it clear amongst my peers that I am uncomfortable any time this word comes up. That I'm uncomfortable even when we bring about someone's issue or someone's problem. We want to bring it up, but whenever we bring up, we should also be bringing up how we can make a difference. For instance, sometimes devotees become a little confused. What is aparad? What is criticism? And what point do we address something? What point do we not step because we may make offenses? But our duty as Vaishnavas is that we are always supposed to go love finding. And it means that we are spiritual scientists. And we're trying to look for truth. Our biggest issue is to be an issue of character and behavior. We find that there's a lot of deviation. And we're not supposed to see and not see, hear and not see. Or are we supposed to just go in campaigns and broadcasting a deviation? But we should bring it up, and in the same conversation that we bring up, we should be discussing what can we do? How can we make a difference? It's like when devotees in their general associations, sometimes there's a fine line. What constitutes fault-finding and offensive behavior, and what constitutes denial? Because we have a duty to be each other's servant. So if something is wrong, if we do not address it, then we begin to think like it, we begin to become like that, it begins to imbibe into our consciousness. We can't be around a constant culture of deviation or of sinful things or exploitation or whatever and not gradually become affected by it if we're not defending ourselves toward it or if we're not doing something to point about how to raise it. Either the environment will bring us down or we bring the environment up. Now, issue we have in leadership in general, and we'll try to spend one day of addressing that because it's a serious crisis. Crisis in leadership with our institution and in the world is that it is often difficult for leaders to change the way they think. Many years ago when I used to go to Switzerland, and first in New York then Switzerland, and work at some work at the United Nations, I was preaching to some of the diplomats there. And after a while I began to notice something. I began to notice that they're in their own world. A lot of my work was with some leaders from some of the third world countries. And I began to notice they drive their limousines or their Mercedes. They get the pounds, the marks, the dollars, hard currency. When they go back to their countries, they go as big people, visiting, you know, some of their friends, showing off, and they come back. They don't really have to be so much a part of the environment that they're representing. And so consciously and unconsciously, they begin to lose touch with some of the real needs and concerns of the people, because in many cases, whatever happens does not directly affect them. Just like now in war, the generals and the brigadiers, they administer war based on computer technology. But in the Vedic time, they declared war, they had to go out on the front line, and they were going to be the first ones who were going to have to interact with whatever the results of their decisions were. So often, where the effects are not directly on us, we have a tendency of sometimes being in denial. That's one issue. The other issue is what is called servant leadership. And we'll discuss that later. Is that often our society breeds people who take to leadership for certain status, certain amenities, that sometimes we have glorified advancement based on certain positions. And so it begins to engender a culture where people are constantly trying to be in charge of others, to control more assets, more facilities, etc. As if that constitutes developing the bhakti lata bija. Sometimes we draw into our organization, as well as other organizations, People who have a desire for leadership are often manic. They sometimes have a kind of a mental illness. It's not mental illness that is so easily describable, but it's a mental illness that has to do with enjoying controlling people, enjoying power. And so they get very attracted to organizations where there is the autocratic position, where people look up to you for their life. See, consider also one of the differences between the demons and the demigods, is that the demigods, they also want power. They want the power that belongs to Krishna. They want to control the lives. They want to be worshipped. They want people's full energy to be under their particular domination. So sometimes some of the best leaders in dealing with the externals are those who have this kind of manic tendency, because they can do and work and work, and they can go and they can make many, many things happen because they are kind of driven in that particular way. I'm not saying that somebody is a hard worker. This is a sign of manic, because some people are just giving their lives. But sometimes we attract or we draw people of that nature. Now, this may sound strange, but we have some people in our movement who are in very high positions that if they didn't have those high positions, they would not even be Hare Krishna devotees. That they have so much captured those positions. Position is like a profession, and they're doing things and sometimes making things happen, but they're making things happen more based on their idea, and that can only last for so long. Because where there's not spiritual potency, after a while, one is not able to deal with the maya that then one will have to be confronted with, because ultimately Krishna intervenes in various ways. So these are all issues. Now, the servant leader is one who really is not much concerned with leadership. People who are too eager to lead others means that they're thinking too much about themselves. But the servant leader is one who is so eager to try to serve, who wants to help, and has such a burning desire to help, that person does not wait for others to do it. They jump in to see that the helping process goes on. They jump in to see that they involve themselves in coordinating the helping process, the caring process. Based on that, they find themselves ahead of the line in various ways, leading, facilitating, but they really have no real desire to lead. They just want to help. So we have people who get in some of these positions because they want to lead because of some of the credits that come along with that. And that was very strong a few years ago, a little less now, because we've had so many fall downs that now people are looking at their leaders from upside, downside, around, evaluating in so many ways. And so in many cases, leadership becomes more and more difficult because it's kind of damn if you do, damn if you don't. But at the same time, it's good that leaders should be scrutinized, because leaders, their actions, their speech should be in accord to their actions, which should be in accord according to the Shastra. Tomorrow we're going to, our time is going so fast. We want to look a little bit at the report that Burke Ruckford did, you know, for the whole society, for the centennial. And he made this report looking at what are the greatest concerns of our devotees in the world. What are some of the things that seems to be slowing our society down or keeping us from making the marks that we're trying to address? So we're going to look at some of those things as a way of trying to see where we're going and how we can more effectively go where we need. And this will address some of the concerns, you know, that you're bringing up. Yes.
Trying to strike these ideas, and my enemy is always trying to knock them down. So there's
There's a...
Sorry?
There's a what?
There's a decreased incidence of depression you're getting in the spiritual...
If the community is... I mean, it's theology. Where a community... It doesn't matter our community, any community. Any community that doesn't honor its theology, you'll find that it has ways of operating on the minds of the people even worse than in the secular community. Just like, for instance, somebody gets cheated by their boss. It's disturbing. But if you get cheated by your guru, it's devastating. Authority figure is there. Relationship is there in terms of service. But because the God people are representing God, then a deviation becomes even more serious. And it makes the depression even greater.
It seems to me that a lot of your presentation needs to be written in Tolkien. I'm not hearing about things like applying the Ashram principles. I'm concerned. I'm concerned that the direction of understanding the field of the community and the work in the community is too much in the mode of, well, you just can't Hare Krishna and everything will be okay. And then, like you described,
sure.
We do have all these problems. It seems that community, what we need to find intermediate transitional ways of going from a secular situation to a purely transcendental situation. It may not maybe need different approaches. That's not a comment.
Yeah, these are the exact things that we're addressing by first taking to our highest authorities what our ultimate goal is. Then we look at the in-between things that help us to be able to attain that. But we also have to look at where we are as we look at what's in between and what the goals are. And as we look at where we... As we look at where we... Somebody get a cough. Where we presently are at this time, where we have abuse of children, abuse of women, abuse of position. Now, if we analyze the abusive nature that's very dominant in our society, and if we try to impose a system that is so much based on categorization, where there is lack of proper consciousness, then we create fascism, we create tyranny. This is why we're discussing about the different types of government, and we talked about monarchy as the greatest. And so ultimately, Von Ashram Dharma system is also focusing on monarchy, oligarchies we have in GBC. But we're saying, yes, that these things that can be the greatest, when it is not proper conscious or when it is not properly used, it becomes the worst. So we have certain goals that we try to move with the in-between. But we have to develop proper conscience even to be able to embrace those sufficiently. If we try to have Von Ashram Dharma system tomorrow or this year, we would have fascism. We would have tyranny. You look at what you know. You look at the kind of corruption we have in our society, the kind of child abuse, the kind of exploitation, the kind of deviations of money, the kind of legal problems, and you look at all of that, and you say, well, yes, we could solve it by Von Ashram Dharma. Yes, we can solve it by how to engage people properly based on their propensities, but when we have people who do not want to recognize their propensity or recognize others and honor them as devotees and treat them as non-devotees, that we have to develop this consciousness. Otherwise, it turns in against us even worse. And that's a serious issue. Is that if what our leadership is now, if our movement massively tried to bring in Von Ashram Dharma, if you think we have problems now in abusing people, the problems would magnify. And even the secular community would attack us based on what would be going on. History has shown what has happened when people of the cloth are not really genuine caretakers. They use their positions and they create like slaves of our people. They abuse people while they enjoy like anything. Already now, we as a sannyasi, we have the best watches, the best computers. We have, in some cases, some people are alleged to have millions in their bank accounts. I mean, this is amazing. While our household is on welfare. And so as we try to set something into motion, it's mainly going to be pushed by our present leadership and our present leadership does not have enough of the real desire of the devotees at hand to set a structure that's really going to take care of the best care of those devotees. So we are not denying that this is the middle what we have to deal with, but we have to look at where we are, the middle, and we're looking at the goals. So today we're kind of jumping at some of the goals, and we're going to be working more with the middle, and so to address some of these things. But it's a serious issue. You look at some of the things that's going on, some of the conferences and some of the discussions, you know, about women, and I'm not supporting feminism, anything like that, or New Age. You look at the degree that our children have been abused. Look at the degree that our cows have been abused. You look at the degree that we don't have situations for the elders. You say, okay, Varnashram Dharma will provide for that. Varnashram Dharma is a natural situation where leadership is caring and where the means, the resources and things are dedicated to trying to give the greatest support and greatest attention so everybody can give the greatest value. But if you don't really value people sufficiently, then all of that becomes actually theoretical. And so we're really trying to address just what you're saying by looking at it from this more holistic perspective and trying to be more real, that we have a society where the majority of our children in our movement have very little interest in this movement, where our greatest detractors now are our own people. Our Ritviks are some of our senior devotees, are those who are trying to sue our movement and take over all of our assets, our own children. Our divorce rate is extremely high. Our depression rate is increasing. So we look at all of these things and we realize that some serious issues are wrong with a community and a philosophy that has the greatest presentation to the world. And we look and see what is happening, how we are turning in against ourselves in such ways. So we're trying to look at those things without just only looking at the negative or only thinking of the actual goal, but working what is in the middle as well. And so it's not just something romantic or idealistic, or we just saying chant Hare Krishna. We're trying to give some specific things. And as our time goes on, we'll give you very specific things that each person can in fact do, because that's our major interest in giving different specific technologies what we can do. Now on that note, while I'm thinking of this, and we're going to have our assignment today, but our assignment for tomorrow is that we would like each of you to take some time as you are associating in the environment, and you may just want to go on a little walk and think about this some also. I know there's even a nicer way to do it. What we'd like you to think about is think about your own community and try to list one or two of the most difficult things that you find distracting what's going on in your community. In other words, you're just looking, just as we did, sort of, we tried to do some critical analysis of ourselves by getting some feedback from someone who knew us yesterday. And today we want to kind of do a little more critical analysis, you know, of our own communities. So just try to look at your community and just try to look at what you see as the number one or two problem that is facing your community at this time. But I want you to do this during the day in small groups. We'll see if this works, so we can try it for the next 2 days also. What we'd like to do is to have you meet in groups of about 10. I think it's maybe I don't know, it's still 50 of us here. Did anybody count the number of devotees here real quick? It was 46. The few are here, a few have left. So we say roughly 50. So we like to have five groups of 10 people each. And in each group, we want one person who will act as a scribe, who will be a recorder, will write some things down. And we want you to spend only about an hour. So that means an hour of your time, if you can afford it. If you can't come, we understand it. But if you can, because we obviously we want to not just to be theoretical, but we want to look at how we can help ourselves and help our communities. So we'd like you to meet in these five groups, and we'll section off the groups, and spend about an hour together, and just kind of share what issues you feel are most problematic in your own community. And then amongst yourselves, you try to offer some advice to each other based on that. And the person who's writing down, just kind of summarize what some of the issues are and some of the advice that's coming from your particular group. So we're going to have five groups of about 10 people each. And based on the group you're in, you choose a place where that you can meet and a time. So before you leave, you'll know a few minutes the group you're in, and you choose a place where you can meet sometime tomorrow. You spend at the most about an hour. Yes, Rukmini? I wanted to try to do that, these kind of things within our group, but the difficulty is being able to record and also the time to be able to have more discussion, because we only have, four days for these classes. Let's see, which devotees would not definitely be able to do this? So maybe just two or three? Just a few more? See, that from 6 to 7:30 is the time we'll have, or 6 to 8 for the actual presentations and discussions. And from some of your questions, I see that there's a lot of areas that we could try to address based on the questions. What we can do, those who can, most of you, maybe four or five of you, are not able to because things you have to do for the festival, other types of activities. If you can't, we understand it. But those who can, then we'll try. So we'll start from here. We'll count to 10. So you won't be able to come. Okay. Tomorrow's 1. Okay. 3. 4. Pranchabhati, you may be able to. 5. 6. 7. 8. 9. And in the back there, 10. Okay. Lemajai won't be able to. So this line here, so maybe we only have about four groups. So this line is the first 10. Okay? Pancharatna, maybe you could be the scribe. You could write. So the idea is that you're going to share, maybe because of time, you just share what you see as the number one problem that you are seeing in your particular community, that your community is confronted with. And then the devotees just try to share from their own understanding how they feel that problem can be addressed. And you just bring some summary of some of the problems and some of the discussions, some of the ideas that were offered. So that's the first group. So you can decide. Can you mention maybe a place? I think these rooms are being used all day long. Because just as we come in, there was a class at ending at 10 to 6. This class will start at 6 again tomorrow. Want to meet in the Gurukula or someplace? You just choose a place, you know the whole area. Or someone's room. So you discuss amongst yourself the time and the place. See, we could do these things here, which I would have preferred, but then to cover more material, it's going to be a little difficult. So we take 10. It's good if we can mix up the men and women also. Let's start from this side. 10. 1, 2, 3, okay, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, was it Jamuna? Okay, 10. Okay, yes. So, did you get your group here? Starts from here. This mother's 1. You want to be able to come? Okay. So is this group here, 10. Let me see the first two rows. So Mother Jamuna, maybe you could meet, you just choose some time, perhaps in Prabhupada's room. What's a good time for you think? Okay. You miss? Oh, okay. Okay. So you may do it earlier, maybe at 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock or something? Okay. While they're doing that, let's get another group. It starts at 6. So we'd like you to have the discussion before. Yes. So if the groups want to do it at the Bhagavatam class, yeah, you can just get in the corner of the temple somewhere. Okay, it's up. You can choose. What we're going to do is just two groups. So Rukmini, you join this group also. And Vishaka, okay, if you join this group. And then we'll just have, let's see, one last group. So everyone else who's left on this side here. Okay? It's about 12 devotees. Now, who can be the scribe for this group? For yourself, would you be available? We need to have, let's see. See, Maharaj, can we steal you from that group and put you over here? Yes, because we'll need you to. We need another senior man over here. So, these devotees who are here, this is about 12. So, all of you will meet tomorrow. Yes, it's about 12 of you. But Maharaj, if you can decide a place where you'd like devotees to meet.
Can I take the hall outside in the hall and talk to them there for one time?
Okay. When the meeting is over, we're going to do 15 minutes more. When we're over, then this section here, you meet with Maharaj and you'll decide a place and a time. So what we want you to do, of course, is a little complex, but not really. We want you just to mention, look at what you feel is a major problem in your community, and you share it, and then we'd like you all to try to discuss, to give some advice, some realizations that you have and how that problem can be addressed. So when we come tomorrow, we can have the three scribes can share with us some of the things that were discussed in the groups. Yes. Does that seem better? What if everybody does it right after Bhagavatam class? But that's breakfast time? That's breakfast. People have to eat and go and do things, huh? Well, this group can do after breakfast. This group is going to, you'll have a time. Over here, it's hard to find a time that everyone can do. Even if you can only get 5 or 6 people, it's still good. This, even that's difficult. Yes, that can happen. Their group is going to do right after Bhagavatam class. So if you are in one of the groups and you can't do, you can join their group. So there's one group after Bhagavatam class. We have another hour. What's the possible hour over here? 5 o'clock? So this group is going to do 5 o'clock. Which place? Downstairs. In his room? 205. So there's another group, 205. You can't make one of the others, you can join that. Smita Krishna, you think of a time and a place that you can do?
I can end up the room from...
Because you can do outside in the grass also someplace.
Yeah, I can say I have my room, but it's not big enough. 320 in Lotus building. And...
Why don't you do that? You're probably only going to get about 5 or 6 people anyway. You're okay?
Yeah, okay. So those
from lunch?
So I will have to figure out.
What about if you say, you said from lunch to 6? So what if you do yours at 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
So we got a 5, we got a Mangalore, I mean after the class, and we got a 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock in room, what's your room?
Room
20 in the Lotus building. You are after after the Bhagavatam class. Yes. Yes, you got the biggest group. Yes, it's okay. Just try. Only because of the situation, maybe half the people may not be able to come, but still we'll be able to have some ideas that we can discuss from those of you who can. Yours is 5:205 in this building, and that's what time? 5 o'clock. 205 here downstairs at 5. Now, I'm sorry, we give you the class here and then we give you work outside. There's some other things you have to do, and we're sorry about that, but little time that we have. Now, the assignment that you had yesterday, no one has had a chance to share something. We have 15 minutes. We want to share a few things. Who'd like to start off first? So we ask you to speak to someone who has been knowing you for some time, and you inquire from them if there are things that you're doing that may be of some botheration to them, and for you to ask them what things that they feel that you need to work more on to become a better devotee. The idea was just getting us into being able to depend on each other more, to communicate more, to realize that we really know each other quite well as we're around each other for a long time. But sometimes our friendship is not real friendship, where we don't really address issues that really often need to be addressed. And many times we address them too late after a person has fallen down or some deviation, or someone is in need and we don't stick up to try to somehow to help. But we should get into a normal exchange with each other. Just like Anuttama explained very nicely in his class today, how important it is for self-investigation. In a healthy community, people need to be taking inventory. In healthy relationships, inventory. So we check in. Husband and wife, with your children, you check in with each other and see what things you need to work on and what the results or the feedback on some of the things that's happening. So who would like to start off first? With what they were able to receive from someone who they spoke with.